Welcome to Happy Path Programming. I'm Bruce Eckel.
I'm James Ward.
All right, welcome to Happy Path Programming. Beautiful spring weather up here in Crested Butte, Colorado. Just loving it. Except for we've got like a foot of snow coming this weekend.
Is that right? Well, and we're not worried about it getting too hot like apparently you are. So,
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, a little overcast today for San Diego, but that's okay. I think it's just kind of the morning thing. I think it'll clear up as the day goes on.
Yeah. Yes. So today we have with us April Winsell. Did I get that right?
Yes, it rhymes with pencil.
Okay. Awesome. And we've never met in person, which hopefully we get to do that somewhere along the way. But I've been following you on Twitter and seeing so much great stuff from you around the way that I'm looking at it. We'll hear from you how you see it. But it's like, how do we help programmers to treat each other more kindly in their interactions? And I love that because I think as programmers, we sometimes struggle with you know, bringing kindness to what we do in our interactions.
Our field also tends to attract neurodivergent folks. It's a better fit. And then they don't always get the kind of support and training that they need to learn to
good tools.
Communicate well.
You know? So I guess that's what's been cool from what I've seen from you is you're trying to help give programmers some tools for how to communicate more kindly, more compassionately.
And effectively.
Thus. That's right.
Yes.
So
I want to hear all about it. But first, before we dive into that work, what's your background? Tell us about you.
Sure. So I started programming in high school. So I was kind of like one of those typical stories. Like, even though I don't look like the typical story, I actually kind of was in that I loved playing video games growing up. And so I was like, hey, I can actually make these. And so I started programming in C++ in high school and really enjoyed it. Like, it really felt like just being able to create these like worlds, like these virtual worlds and everything, and just felt very empowering and fun. So I went on to continue studying it in college. And then, I moved to the Bay Area, which is, you know, a good place to find some tech jobs.
Center of our universe. Yep.
Yep. And I did. And it was, I did that for about 10 years in the Bay Area, worked at some startups and larger companies and moved around a lot, job hopped before it was cool. Now it's kind of cool. I did it before it was cool. Got a diverse range of experiences at companies. And, you know, this will tie into what we talk about, but I noticed that at all these companies, like, they were different sizes, different technologies we were using, like Ruby on Rails, like Python, C#, C++, like all over the board, JavaScript. I kind of did all kinds of stuff, iOS, Android. And I noticed, though, there were some common themes in terms of the problems we'd run into on teams. And it turned out to not really be the quote-unquote technical stuff so much as the human stuff. And, you know, you kind of alluded to it a bit in terms of the communication on teams and making that more effective. But that's really only one piece of it, because it's also about, you know, how we're treating ourselves, like when we do make a mistake or when we do, you know, or when we're like at risk of burning out, how we treat ourselves and that, our self-talk, our internal self-talk. It also affects like how we think of the users. I mean, you know, there's that, I've heard like stupid user or idiot user a few too many times in my work. And then also how we think about our larger societal impact. So, you know, this is kind of more talked about these days, but when I started my company, like, you know, 8 years ago or so, it was kind of not so much talked about, like how our impact on the environment, our impact on, you know, just jobs in general and job availability and how we, all of that. And so just being more mindful of the impact we're having on mental health, et cetera. And so I think that really it's a whole holistic approach to thinking about how, as human beings, how we show up in our development work. So that's why I started my company, to kind of help developers with this on a very practical level, and also get them to think, you know, beyond the practical. So it's kind of, I kind of try to go at it from both angles.
Huh. So you working in the Bay Area, working in tech, you began to see that, oh, we maybe could be doing communication with others better, treating our customers more kindly, treating ourselves more kindly, and all of that is helping us to treat our world more kindly. And how do we help give people the tools to do that better? Is that a summary of kind of what
Perfect.
Your journey
Yes.
through that?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And so, and of course, people may wonder, like, well, why did you think you could help with that or whatever? Or like, why did you think, you know, this was your thing to do? And it's because I kind of got burnout, you know, on all these problems I would see on Teams, you know, and I would see like, a great example is like Stack Overflow, and like especially I think it's gotten a little better, but it's definitely this classic place where a lot of people would go looking for help, like newcomers, but even like people advanced in the industry would be learning a new technology and would maybe ask for help on Stack Overflow. And they were often made to feel like an idiot for asking a question. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, when you're with a supportive teacher, they'll say, oh, there's no such thing as a stupid question. You ask whatever, right? And it's like the opposite philosophy on Stack Overflow, which is that almost guaranteed that you're asking a stupid question and you should feel ashamed for not being able to figure it out yourself is kind of like what happens. Yeah.
We have an even better example, which is the Scala community.
Oh, do tell. I'm not very familiar with it. So yeah, tell me a bit more about it.
It is. You think Stack Overflow is a friendly place compared to the Scala community.
Okay.
Yes, it has gotten better. There's been a lot more kindness than there was, but
yeah, but it's still the when I try and introduce nonviolent communication to people, I say, okay, look, we've all been acculturated to believe that winning means making the other person wrong and bad. And that just, I mean, nobody responds well to that. You know, that isn't an
open. It feels good to be right and for someone else to be wrong.
It does. It does.
Smarter than
for a moment, it feels like, ooh, I won based on that standard that we've been brought up with. But then it doesn't feel good when you go, I feel alone and disconnected. Mm-hmm. And, I have to say, when I started learning it, after a little while, I started going, wow, what would my life have been like if I had known this when I was in high school or college or whatever?
And nonviolent communication.
And nonviolent communication. Yeah. And I noticed that you used the term compassionate, which other groups have said they don't like, you know, having the word violent in there. But I think Marshall Rosenberg did that for a reason, you know, because it does make you kind of go, wait, I'm not violent, am I? Hmm. And it makes you think about it. So, but
yeah, well, I'm glad you brought up nonviolent communication because that's been a huge inspiration for my work too. And even in like the original book, Nonviolent Communication, he says this could also be called compassionate communication. You know what I mean? Because it is like that. Like I remember reading that, and I just, you know, I think it really appeals. That sort of structured way of communicating, I think, really appeals to people in tech who are used to very structured kind of like approaches to things. And so I've noticed that of all the types of communication tools and whatnot, ones like that, where it's like, you know, here's sort of the algorithm for how you communicate, like I think seems to resonate well. And so I think that's why it's like been why I really liked it and why I think other developers can kind of understand it well.
Yeah, it's like systematic. So, yeah. It gives you a framework to go back to when you're having feelings and don't know how to.
Yeah, because you kind of lose your ability to think when you're in the midst of it. And I came up with a way to use your hand as your, because, you know, here's the first thing is you want to look at some objective thing and your finger is kind of like a gun and you never point that at another person. So you never go, James, you did thing and you're wrong and bad. You just go, hey, a thing happened. There's dirt on the floor. And then,
so the pointer finger reminds you, point your gun at a person, point it at the thing
at
that
an
happened.
Objective, something objective that happened. And then the longest finger on your hand, which is the, you know, so this is the second thing. The most important thing is, how did you feel about it? What, explain your feeling. And if you can just get the first two, that's great. And then if, even better if you can get to, I feel this way because I have a need for something. And then you've got requests, which is more advanced.
So the pinky is the request.
The pinky is requests, yeah. And then this, the thumb, which is like, if you can't do any of these things, you fall down to curiosity. Hmm. So everything, so that's kind of your foundation is you're not saying this is the truth. You're going, I'm wondering what's happening here. And then if all of that fails, It goes all the way down to your feet. And that means I need to take a break. I'm not working well here, and I'm going to come back. Anyway, so
that's a good
well,
way to,
and the nice thing is
the framework for NVC.
Framework for NVC, and you've always got it with you. And so if you're just freaking out, you can always just look at your hand and start, you know, kind of using that as a structure.
Anyway. I love that. Cause it's also like a mindfulness exercise as well. Like, you know, just even just the first step of, like you said, looking at your hand, sometimes that will be enough to kind of center you in the moment. And
yeah.
So tell us more about your journey and what you've been creating or trying to help people.
Yeah. And what brought you to this? Yeah. What was your sudden inspiration that you needed to learn this stuff?
I felt a bit burnt out. Let's see, it must have been towards the end of 2015, early 2016. And I was kind of burnt out on the industry for the reasons that I kind of mentioned. Also, I feel like I had been trying so hard to fit into this culture that you were talking about, where it's like, I have to make the other person wrong so that I feel right. And I wrote a blog post about this called Confessions of a Recovering Jerk Programmer, where I talked about my thoughts that I needed to be a jerk programmer. And like, in my defense, I mean, I think that a lot of the famous programmers that we would put on pedestals from the past were a little bit rough around the edges in terms of their communication style, in terms of, like, I'm thinking of like the Linus Torvalds of the world, and it's not a personal knock on him. It's just that his code review practices, I think, could be seen as a bit aggressive, you know, full of the expletives, full of, well, this is an idiotic way of doing this. Like, what's this complete idiotic BS, whatever kind of things. Like, so I think that when you're in, especially like coming into it as like a woman, and again, I'm not like meaning to dwell on that, but like, I'm kind of from this group that like doesn't really fit in. And so I'm trying to fit in. And so let me look around. Okay. And it's not like it was a conscious thing. I think it was subconscious. Like, oh, I see the cool people around here kind of insult the different technologies and kind of act superior. And so I sort of took on some of those traits, even though it's not really who I am. And anyway, and so I did that for a while. And I, like you,
so
like,
you identified at some point that didn't feel good to you.
Exactly. For the same reasons that we were talking about earlier, like you feel disconnected. You feel isolated and alone. And that's how I felt. And so I was like, I need to do something. So I saw the need to fix it in myself, or to at least, you know, kind of help myself grow and to learn those things. And so I learned about compassion in an interesting way. I was reading a bunch of books, like sort of self-help psychology books, et cetera. One book that was helpful on this journey was Self-Compassion by Kristen Neff. And it was about how we don't have to beat ourselves up in order to like be good at things. Like you can actually speak kindly to yourself and still, you know, decide to improve and learn things. That was a big part of it. I also went vegan around this time. I had been vegetarian for a little while, but I went vegan. And in a lot of the vegan world, they talk about compassion, like having compassion for animals. And so I actually went to a retreat about compassion in the Bay Area, and it was specifically for vegans, but we talked about compassion more generally and like what it means and like the science around it. Because there's been more research now about compassion and what it looks like in the brain, you know, at least our current understanding of it, and how it's practical in the workplace and in, you know, relationships and all of that. And I was just so drawn to this idea. And so there was an exercise in that retreat of, now that we've learned all about compassion, how are we going to incorporate it into our lives, and how, what are we going to do? And that's when I was initially brainstorming about compassionate coding, because I was thinking, hey, the tech world could really use some of this. And I was like, I know I can, and I'm sure that there are other people based on my experiences. And so that's where I thought, okay, like this is what I'm going to do. And so that's why I started it. And I sort of started the company in 2016 as I ran it in kind of a lean startup style, where I was like going to do little tests and see what works and then like iterate and move from there. So I thought, okay, well, why don't I start teaching some of the things that I've learned that work on teams and that work well? And so I started teaching these workshops on emotional intelligence, and I started blogging about it and tweeting about it, as we alluded to. That was back when Twitter was a little more fun than it is now, but that's a whole other story.
Twitter could use some more compassion, for sure.
For sure. And so actually my first client came in through a Twitter DM. They were like, hey, you know, I like the stuff that you're putting out. Like, would you, you know, come talk at our company about this? And I was like, sure. And I decided to make it a business rather than a nonprofit. Because, you know, I could do this as a nonprofit and it could just be something nice that I do. But it really does help support the bottom line, in the sense of, you know, not to always tie it to that, but it really does. I mean, if you're communicating more effectively on the team and you're thinking more about the users, like, turns out you're going to like work together better and create better products, and you're probably going to have better retention on your employees and your customers, et cetera. And there's research to back this up. And so, and also just anecdotally, like, I've observed that in the work that I've done. So anyway, so that's why I made it a business, so that, because it is providing value and it is, you know what I mean? And that way I could dedicate the resources to it in order to do that. But I also do a lot of things like pro bono. Like, I speak at a lot of schools, and like, I just, you know, like to mentor a lot. And that's just something I do for the community and whatnot. So I'm not like the best capitalist, I'll be honest, but I at least a little bit am trying to strike that balance. And that's why I think of it as a conscious business, because it's both like a business, but it's also like, I want to make sure that I'm giving back and doing it from a place of like integrity. And that's been really important to me as well. So yeah, I've been doing that now for 8 years. I've done workshops at some of the big tech companies, some of them that are like weird about you using their names, so I won't share all of them, but like, you know, and also some, you know, a lot of small startups, and I've spoken at like, you know, conferences around the world about this stuff. And it's been quite a journey. It's been really fun. It's been challenging at times. I definitely got a lot of pushback early on. People would say, compassionate, and so on Reddit, someone shared an article I'd written. I knew better than to share it on Reddit, but someone shared it for me. And just people wrote, oh, this is such a girly thing and whatever, which is an interesting sort of insult. I mean, I guess it meant to be an insult.
That's an insult. Yeah.
I mean, it shouldn't be, right? It shouldn't be.
No, of course not. No, but in that context, yeah, that's a way to, I mean, but of course you understand that they're frightened. They're disturbed. They're uncomfortable by this.
They're having feelings about
it. Yeah, they're having feelings about it, and that's not what we want.
So,
well, and that's the magic of compassion. Sorry, I just want to say that's the magic of compassion, right? Is that you can view it from that angle, and then you don't feel as bad about it. Because even if it doesn't excuse the behavior, it's like, I don't have to take it personally, because it's like, oh yeah, they're just hurting, and that's why they're trying to hurt me, and I don't have to, like, you know, I don't have to get on board with that. I can just feel compassion for them.
One of the things that I've learned is that when you forgive somebody, it's really, it's you putting the burden down. Mm-hmm. It's not about whether they might not even understand it, but if you forgive them, then you can let it go. And that's why it's such a relief to do that. But I have a question, which maybe it's a little advanced. So we're talking about compassion, and then there's empathy. Have you like looked into those things?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So please talk about the difference between compassion and empathy.
Okay, absolutely. And this is where, you know, when people say like, compassion, that's non-technical. I'm like, no, we can get very technical about compassion. Like, we can, you know, we can get down to like, you know, like I said, there's like neuroscience around this and like what's going on in the brain and whatnot. So what I will say is like with empathy, there are also different shades of empathy and different types of empathy. So there's like emotional empathy, like affective empathy is another way that people say that. And that's when you actually like feel the emotions that somebody else is feeling. So you like see them get hurt and like almost like you feel the pain. And so like, if you like, you can like, if somebody burns their hand on the stove, like you might like kind of cringe and feel like, oh, I can imagine. Like, I feel like that a lot. If like you hit an elbow, you see someone hit their elbow, I often feel that. I'm like, oof, like I my elbow hurts a little bit. That's that, you know, kind of thing where you can really kind of feel their pain. And then there's cognitive empathy, which is more about kind of on an intellectual level, understanding what that person may be feeling based on what you've observed and like based on what you know they're going through. And so those are kind of two types of empathy. And so given that, like compassion, the way I see it, and again, researchers actually disagree on this and have different viewpoints, but the way I look at it is in line with how they talk about it at the Greater Good Science Center at UC Berkeley. And they explain compassion as empathy combined with wanting to alleviate suffering. So meaning if you understand what someone's going through and you see that they're hurting, you have this active desire to do something about it. And that adding in that piece is what turns it into compassion. Hmm. Of course, that is a little bit different from the original meaning of the word compassion, which is to suffer with, because that sounds more like empathy, right? Like you're mm-hmm. feeling the same things they're feeling. And so that's why, you know, these terms evolve over time. And so I think that the modern kind of definition in the social science world and whatnot leans more towards empathy combined with a desire to help.
Yeah, this is a problem that I've been struggling with for a while. And somebody, I don't know where I saw this, they were talking about, they're going, okay, if you feel what the other person is feeling, so they're suffering and now you're suffering. Now, there's part of you that wants them to relieve, you know, to not be in pain. But then there's the part of you that you're going, I'm suffering right now and I want that to stop. And then you go, or I go, oh, but if I can fix that person, then their pain will stop. And then I can, you know, and it gets all convoluted and it ends up being me wanting to fix that person and understanding, at least intellectually now, that there's no way to do that. I mean, they're going to have their suffering.
Because you've had empathy and shared those feelings, you want to fix them so that you can fix your own.
So that my pain will stop. Yeah. And of course, that's all mixed around. And the real challenge is to say, I can't fix somebody else. They're going to suffer. I might be helpful, but I can't help. I can't make their pain stop. But it's real. I mean, we're engineers. We want to fix things, you know? And so we see that, and that's just an impulse. And letting go of that for some reason is really hard.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's true. Like, sometimes compassion just involves being present with someone's pain and not trying to make it go away. Because again, if you are trying to like fix their pain, it's almost like you're saying to them, like, you shouldn't feel this way, and there's something wrong with you for feeling this way. And then that's not very compassionate, because then they feel, on top of feeling bad, they feel bad about feeling bad because they're bringing you down.
And they feel unseen. And there's all those things. Yeah.
So this ties back to a question I want to ask you, which is, it sounds like for your journey into this, the self-compassion almost led your journey. And so you had to find the self-compassion to then be able to then have the external compassion. Was I picking that up right?
Yeah, that is kind of how I explained it. And I think, you know, of course, in reality, it was probably kind of this in parallel a bit, you know, because I also think that I was always harder on myself than I was on other people. So no matter how much of a jerk program I may have been to others, I think I was always the ultimate jerk to myself, like in sense of like I was very perfectionist, and I still kind of am. That's something that's like one of my like struggles, right? Is like perfectionism, and that involves being really hard on myself about like when I make a mistake or whatnot. Like it's hard. Like I was doing an art, like a sip and paint night last night, where you know you have a glass of wine and do some painting, and like I'm not a painter, and so what I produced like wasn't good. It was like fine, and I was just like, to be honest, I was very uncomfortable because I was just like, I'm doing.
It wasn't perfect.
It's not perfect. It's like very bad, and it's like, you know, obviously I should have just been having fun, but anyway, or I want it to have fun. Should is one of those words from nonviolent communication that, you know, to avoid. So I try to catch myself when I say should.
Oh, yeah. Should is, well, and this is why art is therapy, is because it brings all of that stuff up and you look at it in a different context and you go, oh, look, I'm stuck on this because it has to be perfect in my head. And then, but then there's the balance of that and then going, all right, am I expressing myself? You know, am I connecting with this? And that's where you want to go versus, oh no, I might mess it up, or I have messed it up, or it's not perfect the way I imagine it to be. It's a whole journey.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And I think the other point about, yeah, I think when you are compassionate with yourself, I think it does kind of like give you a little bit of safety to feel like you have the capacity to be more compassionate towards others. And so because you know that like you have this home base that's safe that you can come back to, I think that does help people open their heart a bit more. And so that's why I like to start with self-compassion too when I teach, because I think it's, I think especially in the audience that I have in tech, like they're also really hard on themselves, like how I am and definitely was more so in the past. And so I think it's like, you expect me to be nice to these other people, but like, you know, it's like the lion with the thorn in its paw. You know what I mean? It's like, they're hurting so much on their own that they don't, you know, they're going to be lashing out at others and whatnot. So you kind of have to help them heal that wound a bit. And that said, go ahead.
Your example of the Reddit comment, it's if you weren't able to come back to a place of self-compassion when you read that comment, then that could just derail you and what you're trying to accomplish and all that. So being able to have that as the foundation seems helpful.
Oh, I think it's essential. I don't know if you have to start there. I think you can start by trying to be compassionate with other people and then eventually realizing, oh, I need to treat myself this way too. But I don't know if that might not be the most direct path. I think starting with understanding, but I don't know, you live your whole life being that way, and it's not something you can just go, oh, natural. I'm being mean to myself. Stop doing that. I should.
Absolutely. And it's also true. It's like, and that's why I think it kind of happens in parallel too. And I think different people will kind of gravitate towards one approach more over the others. Like some people are just naturally like more giving and they're, you know, sometimes over giving and whatnot. And so to be honest, for them, it might help to start with understanding what compassion for others feels like, just because that is easier for them to start with. So you're absolutely right. I think that sometimes that's easier to start with. And then you realize, hey, I'm being so nice to everybody else. And like that, you know, that maybe I can throw some of that kindness my way as well. Especially if you have a teacher who can guide you to like, to see that like, you know, I think Kristen Neff, one thing that she always says is like, speak to yourself as you would a good friend. And so I think the implication there is most of us actually do know how to be compassionate with our friends to some degree. At least we know how to try. We might sometimes use some empathy blockers by accident when we're trying to help. We might try to fix them, et cetera, but we at least know what we're trying to do, which is like to, you know, support our friends. And yet sometimes we like beat ourselves up. Like, for example, to tie this back to programming, it's like, if you break the build, you might be like, oh my gosh, like I'm such a like idiot for breaking the build. Like it's so bad that I broke the build, and kind of be like, how could I do that? Like, I guess I'm just not a good programmer. And I guess like, you know what I mean? Like I let my team down. I've thrown off everybody's day. Versus if your friend did it, or like somebody you're mentoring or whatever, you'd probably be like, it's okay. We're going to fix it. Like, you know what I mean? And say like, I know that was a tough thing to go through, but we're going to take these steps and then we're going to see what we learn from it. And you kind of have this, you know what I mean? So you can kind of apply that. If you can apply that to yourself, then, you know, you save some of your energy so that you have more to give to others in the world.
That's cool. So let's talk a little bit about what you do in your compassionate coding stuff. Tell us about what you've been on this journey for, I think you said 8 years now. Mm-hmm. What is it that you're doing?
So it usually starts off with somebody like in leadership at like a tech company will reach out and say, hey, you know, either we're struggling with XYZ or we're actually
I have a bunch
good.
Of jerks.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty
and
much.
I want to fix them.
Exactly. Yeah. But or more often lately, especially, it's like, you know, we feel like everyone's actually really nice on the team, but they're not really communicating. And so they're like, quote unquote, nice, you know? And so, and you know, because there's like the soft side of compassion and there's also like the tougher, like fiercer side of compassion. And so sometimes like lately, what I have been doing is they'll say, yeah, everyone's so afraid of like offending each other or like whatever, that they're not actually saying when we need to address something, they're not speaking up. And so sometimes it's about like assertiveness, because that also ties in with compassion. Because if compassion is really about alleviating suffering, then sometimes that's going to mean having a tough conversation about what's going on. And so sometimes that's what the issue is. So anyway, they'll come and I'll do an interview with the leadership and then some people on the team, kind of like user interviews, that kind of thing. It's, you know, it's kind of research interviews to understand what's going on the team, some of the dynamics, some of the values on the team. And then I'll create a workshop, a training for them tailored to some of the issues going on and using examples that are based on like what they've shared with me of things that have happened on the team. And so it's very customized. So it's not like one of these like, oh, I just have a standard deck and I just kind of click through and read off of a script. I like to, because that would be boring for me, to be honest. And I think as an engineer, we were always like, I was always bored by those kind of presentations. And so that was part of, in starting my own company, I was like, no, I'm not going to do it like that. Like, I'm going to do it where it's like tailored, it's relevant. And I even put coding in the name, even though technically a lot of what I talk about can apply to anyone. And I've even had people like, I was telling my banker, like what I do or whatever. And they're like, can you give that for like the financial industry? Cause we need that too and whatnot. But so it really does apply. But the reason I threw coding in there is because what I found is with engineers, a lot of times what they care about most is the code. And so if I can start from, here's how, if you understand compassion and look at it, here's how it might affect how you name variables or how you design systems or, you know what I mean? Like how the architecture that you choose, the API design choices, if you can see how compassion might inform that, then I think that helps them pay attention more because they're like, oh, she's speaking our language. Like she, you know, so it's a way of, to connect. And so that's why I kept coding in the name, because it's like, even though we may not write code specifically in the session, although I have given like compassionate coding workshops on like test-driven JavaScript, for example, in which it is a coding workshop, it's just these principles are underpinning it, where it's like from a place of compassion, both in how I teach it, in how, you know, the types of code that we're writing and how we go about it, the things we say to ourselves as we do it. So it really can apply in every way. But yeah, typically the workshops are divided into like, we talk about self-compassion. We talk about, you know, understanding our own emotions. I'll share like a list of emotions. And sometimes that's the first time a developer's ever really thought about it. And they'll be like, oh, I didn't even like, you know, they're like new words. They'll be like, oh, what does this mean? Or, you know, I didn't even realize there were different shades of this or whatever, if these words. And so that, even that sometimes has a light bulb go off. And so understanding where like our own kind of emotions and how they affect how we communicate. And then we'll talk about how we do communicate and like the words we use. And that's where I pull in stuff from nonviolent communication, but also things like difficult conversations. That's also been like an informative like book for me that I really enjoyed in that approach. And so, and then like my own experience. And so it's this mishmash of like all of the things that have like affected me and things that like have inspired me. And it's always changing and evolving, because I want to keep like showing the most relevant things and the most interesting things to the people I'm talking with. And then we'll always include an action plan, which is kind of like what next steps. Because the other thing that's frustrating about a lot of trainings for developers is you do them and then you kind of go back to doing whatever you were doing. And it's almost like, why did I even do this training? Because I didn't really. And so I try to include an action plan that's very specific about like, okay, now that we've learned all this, where, what are the areas where I want to grow? And then what can I do specifically to like grow in those areas? And so, although the workshops are different based on each team customized, I do like to, that's like a rough structure that most of them follow. And we definitely always include some kind of action plan. Even if it's a shorter workshop, if it's like an hour long and I'm just doing an abbreviated version, we'll just do one action item, but it's still something to be like, I want to carry this forward and I want to keep going with it.
Nice. Yeah. No, I think it helps focus. It all makes sense to me. And also, because you have a background in coding, you're more of a trustworthy source. So, you know, I think people will be more comfortable with you than some random business advisor who comes in and, you know, doesn't know what field you're in. One of the things that I have found kind of liberating about nonviolent communication is I've always been conflict avoidant. And it gives you tools where you go, okay, it might not just turn off the conflict avoidance, but it also makes you go, oh, there are ways to at least attempt to navigate this rather than just going in and saying, oh, somebody's mad, there's conflict going on, I don't want to have anything to do with this, I'm just going to remove myself from the situation entirely. And it's like, no, it's possible. I can't say I'm good at it yet, but knowing that, oh, there are things that you can do that will maybe help navigate.
Well, and that sounds like you've got kind of both sides coming to you saying we've got jerks, or we've got the conflict avoidant people, or, you know, mishmash of everything. And so how do we help both the kind of both sides of that spectrum get better at communicating, communicating and caring for each other and themselves?
Yeah. And even just the point of making yourself clear, knowing that, oh yeah, there is a way for me to speak so that I can get my point across without, I don't know, for lack of a better word, raising the hackles of the other person. You know, for example, avoiding the word you when you're talking about these things. That takes some mental work to do that.
Yeah.
But then you're going in and you're knowing, okay, I'm not accusing this person of anything because I avoid that word altogether when I'm talking about these things.
This thing happened.
Yes, a thing
happened. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's what you said too about like the conflict avoidant and then the people who are like love conflict. I think that one exercise we do that's kind of fun, especially if we're in person, it's like even more fun, is like people line up across the room in terms of like their spectrum, in terms of how they feel about conflict avoidance or like, you know, like conflict approaching there. And you can kind of like see, it kind of helps people understand each other too. So it's both understanding how you fall on that spectrum and also seeing that some of your coworkers may fall, you know, on other parts of the spectrum. And again, we do this when there's trust. I don't do it like, you know what I mean? If people are not really comfortable with each other, I don't like make them do this like weird thing. But it's like, I try to gauge the room, read the room, which again is hard to do in the virtual world. That's why one thing that's been challenging during the pandemic for me was like the virtual world, because I think that it's so much harder to connect emotionally. Like the mirror neurons don't fire as much in the virtual world. Like there's all these things that have been really challenging. And so I still do the workshops because, again, people find value in them, and I've adapted and I've learned a lot from that. But there's something about being in the same room that is magical, and like, you know, you two have right now, and I, you know, enjoying the company of my plants. But but yeah. And so I think that that's something that like is kind of a fun thing. But anyway, point of that story was just that, like, I think knowing that some people have different ways of relating to conflict, even just knowing that is helpful, because then when you're like, why is that person so like angry all the time? It's like, no, they just have a different way maybe of relating to conflict, or like, why is this person never speaking up, you know? And it's like, okay, well, because they have a different way. And so I think understanding different personality types is definitely part of empathy, part of compassion too.
One of the things that, well, I guess it's maybe a little bit more advanced, and I don't know if you teach it in your workshop, the idea of the empathy guess.
Oh, well, where you're trying to guess what someone's going through, kind of thing?
You're trying to guess. You're going, oh, maybe they're angry because, I don't know, they
didn't have breakfast.
They didn't have breakfast, or they had an argument with their partner this morning or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you're not saying that this is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying, oh, did something happen this morning that maybe that's
yeah.
What you're feeling?
Have you read Oprah's book on what happened to you?
That's more of a should. This is, so the idea is that this, you say it in the form of a question, and it opens. It allows the person to go, no, what happened was, you know, I ran over a dog on the way to work or something like that, and I'm really torn up about it. And so it gives them the opportunity to correct. So you're just making a guess so that they can come back and say, oh, well, maybe it is what happened, your guess.
Yeah.
But if it isn't, it opens a conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah, I haven't heard it with that term before, empathy mm-hmm. guess, but of course that makes sense. Yeah. And mm-hmm. that's a tricky one too. You're right. It is advanced, because like what immediately comes to mind too, probably just because I'm a woman, right? Is like sometimes like if a woman's having a reaction to something, it could be something like, oh, is it that time of the month? And it's like, maybe don't ask that. Like, you know what I mean? So sometimes, you know, there has to be some...
It's care. You have a lot of care because you want to make sure that I'm not saying this is what's happening. I'm trying to open a conversation about it, and
yes.
I'm curious about what's going on with you. I'm not attached to my answer.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Because no, that makes sense. I'm sure there's some nuance. Yeah, that is required there. Because I'm even thinking about someone like, you know, saying like, oh, did you get enough sleep last night? Kind of thing. It can come off depending on how you phrase it and how it's whatever.
Yes.
It can sound like you're like
an accusation or
yeah.
like
accusation judgment. So you have to be
reaction.
Yeah.
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 So it's
probably
not
very careful
yeah.
treading on.
Did you, are you, yeah, it's like almost you want to start with, are you feeling anxious or upset because you know, are you maybe feeling a bit tired or something like that? But yeah, not going necessarily to the conclusion about what happened, because that's not what the important thing is about
right.
the empathy guess. The important thing is I'm curious about what's happening with you right now.
It's one potential approach to bringing
yeah.
curiosity and trying to get understanding
based
of,
on curiosity. Yeah. It's like, I want to know what's happening with you. I don't want to tell you what's happening with you. I
yes.
want to, and yes, that's a subtle fine line.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, that's a good one.
But it's important. Yeah. I also noticed you used the term capacity, which I first connected with through this. I mentioned Mickey Cashton, who's she's a great teacher. In fact, somebody you might be interested in looking up. But she, well, are you familiar with Gerald Weinberg? Are you?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Love his work. Yeah.
Yeah. The Secrets Gerald of Consulting, Weinberg, yeah. And then you know his famous. He's famous for saying, "No matter what they tell you, it's always a people problem." That goes right. Yeah. But he once I studied under him, and he once talked about. He goes. Look, if you don't want to do something, or it's not working for you, you say, "That doesn't work for me right now." And then nobody can argue with it. But Mickey had an even better way of putting it. As she says, I don't have the capacity for that. And that's even more clear that it's about you and it's not something that somebody can argue with, which nice. I think a lot of people get, you know, oh, how do I say no if they're going to argue with me? But if you put it in such a way, it's like, no, this is all going on with me. I can't help you because of that. And then you can't come back and go, oh, yes, you can, or you can do this, or, you know, try and solve the problem so that they get what they want.
Yep.
So in your training that you do, because it's more oriented towards programmers, are you able to give people guidance on more specific activities like code reviews or stand-ups or postmortems or like the things that programmers are involved in? Do you integrate this into those kinds of activities or help train people on how to do those things better?
Absolutely. Yeah. So like one of the talks that I have up on YouTube is Compassionate Yet Candid Code Reviews. And it's about like how you can give direct feedback in code reviews and still be compassionate. So yeah. So code reviews is a big one. And that is often, I shared how sometimes the leadership will share things that have happened on the team. Sometimes it will be like a code review that's gone awry because somebody, you know, it was a big pull request maybe.
Escalation of aggression. Yes.
And so they'll share some screenshots of that and be like, hey, you know, this is something that happened. And I was like, oh, interesting. Okay. And it gives me like a little example there to work from. And so, yeah, code reviews is a big one. I think, yeah, performance reviews, design reviews, all of that comes into play. Definitely, you know, how we communicate. So, yeah, that's when I say like it's tailored to engineers. That's the thing is I can use examples like that. Like one of the kind of role-playing examples that we do sometimes is about a product manager and a developer kind of having a discussion about timelines and about new features versus refactoring, all of that, like typical stuff that we deal with. Like, and so I think using examples like that, sometimes people will say, oh, is this an example? I'll always say, this is not an example that happened here, but it's like something maybe related. And they're like, are you sure this isn't from here? Because I'm pretty sure we've had this exact conversation. And so it seems to resonate. And like one of the things that someone said after the workshop that like meant a lot is they said, like, you can tell this was like written by an engineer for other engineers. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Because, and that said, like sometimes people that are not engineers will sit in, like whether it's a marketing person, the CEO, like whatever, and they'll still get a lot out of it. But it's like, I mean, you, to know how hard it is sometimes to connect with engineers, especially on topics like this. And so it means a lot when like, it's also if a skeptic comes in and they'll even write that in the feedback, they'll say, you know, I was skeptical going into this, but like, I actually learned a lot and I can see how this is useful. And that's kind of my favorite thing. And maybe that's just my personality type of like, I kind of like a challenge. And so I like connecting with those jerk programmers, like my old self and, you know, opening them, their hearts a bit to this sort of stuff. I mean, you know, we're guiding them as they open their own hearts to put it in a better way. But yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that I have found, maybe this is another advanced topic, but as an opener is showing vulnerability. For example, in the code review or in a situation where we and our friend Bill have been working on a book the last 3 years, and James and Bill know far more about this topic than I do. And I have to say, I don't understand this. And, or this, I don't know, this isn't working for me. And opening myself up to the vulnerability that, oh, well, I'm not smart about everything. Oh, there's something that I don't know. But I find that allows other people, if you set that example, it allows other people to say, I don't know. And you'll never learn anything if you pretend to know it already. And so that, and just in general, that challenge of expressing vulnerability is, I think, an important part of connecting.
Absolutely. And I think in like a team environment, it's often easier for somebody with more power in the organization to kind of start that process. Because mm-hmm. if you're coming in as the junior engineer, you probably don't know anything. But if you're the only one willing to admit it, it's probably not going to help you very much. But if somebody who's a little more established, has a little more power, especially someone in leadership, if they can model that, yes. and then they make it safe for other people to admit right. it, I think I think you're absolutely right.
I had Diane Marsh on, who is in management at Netflix, but
not anymore.
Oh, not anymore. No, she retired. That's right.
Yeah, she's just right. traveling yeah. around enjoying herself. Amazing.
So she was in management at yeah. Netflix, and yeah. she had talked about, I think this was even on our episode with her, how she had to lead her team into vulnerability, and it started with her vulnerability to the team.
Well, and she had reached out to me, and I gave her the name of a NVC coach that I liked a lot, nice. And they brought him back multiple times. Huh. So, yeah.
So in any of your training, do you talk about vulnerability? Is that a piece to it, or...? Or does yeah. it happen kind of naturally from?
Yeah, it weaves in for sure. Like we talk about it because, I actually include the prime directive from Agile Retrospectives. Like we talk about that because, you know, for people not familiar, like you say, like, regardless of what we uncover today, like we understand and truly believe that everyone was doing the best job they could, given what they knew at the time, their skills and abilities, and the situation at hand. Like I'm paraphrasing a bit, but like that's the gist of it. And when I introduce that, I talk about how like we're going to be sharing vulnerable things here today. Like because we work through exercises where like maybe we lost our temper or like we were too afraid to speak up or things that are very vulnerable to share. And so I try to establish like how important that is to as we do that to like not mean like so that people know they're not being judged like in a harsh way for that. At least that's what we're trying to establish is that this is not what the session's about. It's about, you know, feeling like safe, quote unquote. I mean, that's overused these days, but like feeling like comfortable to some degree, like sharing things like that. And so I do try to establish that. And also I'm vulnerable in the sessions, right? So like I think what's interesting is like the reason I wrote that blog post, Confessions of a Recovering Jerk Programmer, because it wasn't like that was my first post that I wrote to introduce this stuff. I actually wrote that because someone came up after a talk I did at a coding school. And he said, well, this is probably like just easy and comes naturally to you. But like, what about those of us who like struggle with this? And I was like, oh, I guess I need to talk about that part of the journey so that people understand that. And that was early on. And so that helped me understand like, okay, it's actually good to share like what I've struggled with and my mistakes in the past and start from that. Cause then people think, oh, if she could learn it, then like I can learn it, you know, kind of thing. That's simplifying yeah. it a bit. But so I actually share a lot of vulnerability in the sessions too, including
you're modeling the vulnerability for them.
Yeah. And how like I still make mistakes. I mean, Karen Armstrong is someone else who inspires me a lot. And she has a book called 12 Steps to a Compassionate Life. And it's funny because she's actually like a religious studies kind of person. But she talks about how like all major religions and all philosophies at their heart are about compassion. But this book, 12 Steps to a Compassionate Life, is actually very practical, like how we might apply it in different ways. And so she talks about how the mission to become a compassionate human being is a lifelong project. And I think that's true. And so I definitely don't have like the ego, the size of like, all right, I'm the compassionate one and I need to make everyone else compassionate. It's like, no. We're all still on this journey together. And we're all still like everybody's learning in their different stages of this. And I still have a lot to learn. I still occasionally, you know, definitely have some reactions to things that are not the, you know, textbook compassionate response to things, right? So I think that admitting that to lets people have their guard down a bit, because then it doesn't feel like I'm like the, you know, like some patrols that like safety patrol officer coming in and being like, you know, all right, let's looking for the not compassionate things. It's like, no, we're all imperfect humans, and that's not going to change.
Right. And if you can tell stories about yourself, about here's a place where I screwed up royally,
yes.
then it makes you more accessible.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
So maybe we should have started with the why,
yeah.
but I'm thinking that we haven't covered why do we do this? Why should we be more compassionate in our work and lives and towards ourselves?
Yeah. And so, you know, and of course it depends on what people care about, right? So it's like the reason to do something is if it's helping something you care about. And so, you know, one of your core values, like that's one of those core needs that comes up in VC. But like, so for instance, if you care about, you know, doing a good job, helping your customers, like writing good code, like compassion can help with that, right? Because like I said, if you can have empathy for your coworkers, you can have empathy for the users, compassion, and how it all relates together, then you're going to create better products. And so if that's your main concern, like, it can help with that. It also, though, helps your own, like, well-being. So if you're, you know, something you value is your own, like, health and well-being, compassion definitely helps relieve stress. Like, kind of what we were talking about earlier in terms of if you're able to let some things roll off your back because you realize it's not about you and this other person's going through something else, it's like it's unburdening yourself. And so it helps you, like, not be so stressed all the time about everybody else out there and what they're doing and what they think of you, because you're able to kind of process it. So it helps in that way. And it, like, helps prevent burnout in the sense of, like, because, you know, that taken to the extreme often leads to burnout. And so I think being, you know, gentle with yourself, gentle with others definitely helps in that regard. So you can look at it from practical, like how it affects the bottom line, absolutely, and team dynamics and all that, which is often sometimes, you know, why companies bring me in, because that's very much what's important to them. But then it also helps, like, how good you feel in the world and how kind of healthy you feel and that. So there's, like, multiple levels to look at it from. And that's not just me, like, claiming it. Like, there's research to support this. There's also, like, you know, anecdotes and, you know, the kind of things that have come out of the work that I've been doing and my own observations. And so, yeah.
Yeah. And in a lot of my work, the times that have been the most fulfilling have been the times that I felt connected to my team. And it seems like compassion is attached to connection. Like, it's much harder to have connection when there's jerkisms.
Here's a possible tagline for your business. Happy programmers write better code.
I love it. That is a good one. That is a good one.
Yeah. So there's that element of connection and creating better connection between people. And then probably related to that, the more connected we are, probably the more efficient we will be, the better we'll be able to work together.
Well, and there's going to be less company turnover if you're really connected to your team. You know, there's all kinds of benefits.
So for businesses, there's benefits. For individuals, there's benefits.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. Is that sufficient on the why question? So maybe last question is, you've been doing this for a while now. Where's it going? What's next? What's on your horizon?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, as I mentioned, like, I to be vulnerable, like, I didn't share, like, all at the time, but like I said, during the pandemic, it was very challenging. Like, and I felt sort of alone because people in tech were still able to do their, like, coding remotely. And so I think for a lot of people, it was kind of business as usual. Like, I've just, you know what I mean? I may be doing it from home, but I'm basically, it was kind of like their ideal setup, right? And especially, you know, a lot of introverts in tech, which again is a good thing. I mean, not saying it's a bad thing, it's just a different thing. And so I think I read this article, it was about, like, how the pandemic shifted the balance between introverts and extroverts. Like, society before the pandemic was kind of geared towards extroverts and introverts kind of suffered a lot, which is why, like, Susan Cain wrote that Quiet mm-hmm. book and stuff, because it's like they were kind of in the minority, or not even minority, but they were not in the, like, part of society that society was catering towards for them. And so, but the pandemic shifted that balance so that extroverts were the ones kind of, like, forced to, like, have a society that did not fulfill their needs and, like, their way of working. And so I'm somewhere in the middle, to be honest. Like, I think I've never really identified strongly in one camp or the other, but I definitely suffered during the pandemic and realized my extrovert side was really hurting. Anyway, and this related to your question, I promise, because, like, I had to do a lot of soul searching, because I got to the point where as the years of the pandemic were dragging on and events were not coming back, because that's been a huge source of, like, energy for me, energy, clients, et cetera, was, like, events. And so those weren't coming back. And I was like, if it really is just going to be me talking to, like, you know, a box of faces for, like, the foreseeable future, like, I'm done. Like, I can't do this anymore. And so I almost was like, okay, like, I guess maybe I'm going to be one of the numbers of businesses that was killed by the pandemic, because, like, I don't want to, you know. And so that said, things have come back. And so, like, coming up, like, I have events, like, in April, I'm going to Chicago to speak at a PHP conference. In May, I'm going to Sweden to speak at a company conference for, like, a consulting agency there. And in July, I'm going to Toronto to speak at a C++ conference. And so, nice. You know, there's these events coming up. Like, I do still do the virtual stuff and whatnot. I have been working on an online course, like a self-paced video course, so that I can reach more people that can't necessarily bring in the full training, but, like, an individual wants to learn these skills. And I've had a lot of like requests for that. So I'm like, okay, I got to give the people what they want. And so I've been trying to work on that. So that's kind of the things I'm excited about. I've always wanted to write a book about compassionate coding, and like a number of like, you know, like book agents and stuff have reached out, and like publishing agencies and stuff. And I've been like, that is something that's on the horizon probably. It's just, that's quite an undertaking. So like, you know, I've sketched out things on like that, but that's kind of like long-term where I see things going. And and you know, I kind of had taken an agile approach to this as well, where I like to kind of see where things go. I mean, who would have guessed about the pandemic? I mean, yeah, but I think I'm finally kind of recovering from that. That was definitely a grief process. And to be honest, like side note, in terms of compassion, I don't think everyone like has processed that grief. And so some of these suffering we see showing up, I think, is people like unprocessed grief from just all of that. And so anyway, but that said, yeah.
I want to point something out there that's part of the NVC process. It's like you were looking at, oh, here's my experience. I'm not feeling good about this. And then you were able to identify a need. And this is why discovering what your personal needs are is so important. You could identify the need and you could say, oh, if this is what life is going to be like, then that's not meeting my needs and I need to change something. And because otherwise, I mean, like me, I bear into something, I'm going, well, I'm just going to keep doing this. And I don't look at it necessarily. And you were able to say, oh, I have a need for in-person connection. And so if my life is just going to be Zoom the rest of it, I'm just like, I'm not going to do that because that's not meeting my need. And it's so valuable to figure out what your needs are, because you can make decisions based on that that will help you be happier.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That makes me feel nice, just because, you know, I felt some shame around some of all of that. And so like your kind words mean a lot. So thank you.
Well, it's probably hard to you've got this vision for how to help people, and then to feel like you're giving up on that vision, probably there is some feelings associated with like, do you really care? Because if you really cared, you'd do it anyways, you know, or something.
You should.
You should.
You should. Yeah. I should do it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. No, yeah. No, thank you.
But the thing is, if you don't identify your need and make decisions based on that, you exhaust yourself and become useless and all that kind of stuff. And so it's like really important to know what your needs are, and everybody's are different.
Well said. Well said.
Yeah. I should link to the needs inventory.
Yes.
In the show.
Oh, yes. That's a good one. Yes.
Yeah. Bruce led a group watching session with the Orin J. Sofer NVC training a couple of years ago.
Yes.
Which was kind of right on the tail of the pandemic. So that was a fun.
Was. Yeah. Yeah.
But highly recommend Orin J. Sofer's NVC stuff if people.
Yeah. Yeah. I've taken a lot of workshops from a lot of different people, and I still miss the in-person workshops. You know, there's something about.
Sounds like you have a need there.
I do.
Yep.
I have discovered I'm much more, I don't know, extroverted than I thought I was. Hmm. Maybe.
Yeah.
But
part of you.
And this is why it's great that you live in the same town as me.
Because
we can get together and connect.
April, is there anything we missed?
No, I mean, I think we covered a lot. This is great. And like, I appreciate like the background in NVC there, because like, I think we got to go a little deeper on stuff that I've been able to do in other conversations. So that was really fun for me too.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, thank you for what you do. I think it is really important work, and appreciate that you're out there helping, especially programmers, to be more compassionate with themselves and others.
I'm glad to see that it's becoming more discovered and maybe accepted in our field.
Yeah. Maybe there's a future where there won't be jerks in our field.
Well, we are humans in the world, so don't hold your breath on that one.
We can dream.
Yes.
We can dream. Yeah, and maybe sometime I would love to see you at the Winter Tech Forum sometime. It'd be great to, now that, you know, I've heard so many good things about it, I'm like, oh, it sounds cool.
We would love to have you. You would add a lot.
Yeah. You're working on dates.
Yes, I'm still trying
we'll
to
announce those dates for next year.
Well, it's only spring. It's only spring, so.
I need to not allow myself to slide into that mode.
Oh, okay. Sorry, yeah, I take it back.
Got me in trouble in the past.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, April. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah. Have a great weekend.
Okay. You too.